Welcome in to another edition, the Wednesday edition of the Stripe Show podcast. We call it Froggy Wednesdays here, and we have had a super busy week in golf, whether it was Phil winning the PGA Championship on Sunday, all the way up to the Bryson and Brooks video fiasco that it was dropped upon us on Monday night. And then now today we have gotten another edition of The Match. Phil Mickelson and Bryson DeChambeau will pair up with Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. So this week we're at the Charles Schwab. And so no better way than to talk about the Charles Schwab Challenge than somebody who's playing in the event and also is trending upwards and playing really, really some really great golf lately. And so we want to bring into the podcast. Thank you so much for giving us your time. Ladies and gentlemen, we have 7-time professional winner and a member of the 59 Club, Russell Knox.
Thanks very much for having me.
You are a member of the 59 Club.
Yes, sir. 2013 was the Nationwide Tour, Boise, Idaho. All came together beautifully on that Friday morning, I believe.
I've got to ask you, did the hole look like it was about that big when you were trying to put the ball in for 59?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I remember I had like a 7-foot par putt on the last hole to shoot 59, and it was weird. Obviously, in order to shoot 59, I mean, everything has to kind of go your way. So I had seen the ball go in the hole all day. So to be honest, I knew I was going to make it before I even hit the putt. It was one of those weird feelings. And Fortunately for me, I hit a good putt and it went in the hole. And that was a fun day for sure.
Now, Russell, we've all had those days where we play well, or at least I know I do. And when I walk off, I'll shoot. For the other example, the other day I went out and shot 75 and I had a triple. So I get in the car and I'm like, man, if I don't have that triple, I could have shot even par. On a day when you shoot 59, do you have that shot where you're like, I could have shot 58.
I mean, I guess the way our crazy brains are wired in golf is to always kind of remember the bad things. So if you shoot 59, you come off the last hole and you're like, oh, I missed a 6-footer for birdie on the 12th hole.
Right.
So, but I mean, you forget the fact that you chipped one in that was going 15 feet past and hit the pin and went in. So
right.
It's a tough way to look at it now, but on that day, I felt like I got most everything out of my round. So I definitely never thought, oh, I should have been 58. I was obviously thrilled with 59.
That's awesome. Well, you've got 7 worldwide wins. Once you get a member of the 59 Club, and I know you're playing this week at the Charles Schwab, you practiced this morning, and now you've got a pro-am later this afternoon. So thank you so much for giving us your time. It has been an unbelievable week in golf. Let's start out last Sunday. Phil Mickelson goes out and wins his 6th major at the age of 50. Everybody's talking about it. It's amazing. I'm sure you were watching it. Russell, where do you stand on where this fits in Phil's resume? Is this his greatest victory?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be really hard to say no. I mean, right up there with its first major victory at the Masters, whenever it was. But yeah, I mean, obviously this came as like a pretty big shock to the golfing world. I mean, I think we all knew that somebody over 50 was definitely capable of winning a major. But I mean, here we go in the last couple of years. I mean, golf has got so young. I mean, the guys coming out of college, Hovland, Morikawa, Wolf, all those guys, Zalatoris, I mean, they're just tearing it up. So, I mean, everyone's looking at the young guys, and then all of a sudden here, Phil wins at 50, almost 51. So, pretty remarkable achievement. But to be honest, if there was going to be one guy to do it, I mean, we all would have picked Phil. I mean, he's obviously a freaking nature talent and has been for 30 years. So, good on him. It was fun to watch for sure.
You know, I'm sure we've all been there. I know as an amateur and my friends, we're all there. You're not playing very well. Things are not good. And if you look at Phil's recent finishes, I don't think he had anything inside the top 20, maybe one finish, a lot of missed cuts. And you would not have picked him to win at Kiowa. It's a long golf course. You really got to drive it straight. There's a premium on hitting the ball well. And yet he comes out and wins. This is really what the sport you've chosen to play for a living, and I've chosen to be a fan. That's what this sport is. He can go from you feel lost to all of a sudden you find it overnight. Does that happen for tour pros as well?
Yeah, I mean, very true. But I mean, it's obvious in someone like Phil Mickelson's case of the career he's had, he strongly believes that he had a better chance to win a major than a regular PGA Tour event. I mean, just because obviously it's harder to win a major. He's way more experienced. He's won obviously five in the past. So it was the same kind of as with Ernie Els, as his career kind of almost came approaching 50. I mean, he still had a chance to win a few. And I mean, when you're that good, you're that talented, you're obviously more excited for the majors when you've won 40 plus times throughout the world. So Phil definitely, it's not like he doesn't try in regular season events for sure, but he would have been definitely more involved with it being a major. And I think because of that, because of experience on such a difficult course, he definitely would have thought that that was his best chance to win one. And still remarkable that he did.
It really is remarkable. You know, I go back to when Tiger won the 2019 Masters, and to me, that was one of the greatest wins of all time in our sport. And now here's this. If you had to rank one is A and one is number B, or one is one and one and two, where do you rank them as far as these two major victories that have really turned our sports upside down for the last couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, mine is hard to pick one as being kind of more impressive as the other. I mean, me being a huge Tiger fan, I mean, it was incredible just watching both towards the end there, the emotions you feel as a fan. It was remarkable to watch Tiger win. And that was one of those moments where you remember how you feel and where you were just watching it. It was crazy, the crowd chanting his name. But Phil, he's made history now. I mean, the oldest major winner. And I don't know if it's going to be beat. I mean, that's an amazing number. And I think the most impressive number is he has 30 years between wins. I mean, that's I think he won when he was 20 and won when he was 50. I mean, that's also a crazy number. But I mean, if I had to, I would still say it's impossible to say Tiger's win is ahead of Phil's. But me being more of a Tiger fan, I'll give him the slight edge. But I mean, they're both in a different world of different category of every other win. So,
you know, it's crazy how one win can kind of start an avalanche, for example, because now people are saying, hey, U.S. Open at Torrey, like Phil's got to be, he wasn't a favorite before, but now he's got to be in the conversation.
Yeah, I think a lot of us probably fall into that of like unfair predictions. I think everybody just needs to kind of sit back and appreciate Phil's win. And I mean, I think he did say in an interview, he's like, this might be my last win on the PGA Tour. Obviously, he's going to have plenty more chances now being exempt for 5 years, even though he was a lifetime member anyway. But he'll get 5 years of all the majors. Or at least the U.S. Open, he was exempt for the other ones. But yeah, I mean, just truly amazing. I wouldn't put him in near a favorite to win the U.S. Open at Torrey, even though obviously his game is great. He could obviously prove that he can win at any time. But I think obviously the stars aligned at Kiowa and he was able to get it done. But I don't think it automatically puts him into the top 10 kind of favorites every time he plays. No,
you know, it was fun watching the end of that tournament, but the crowd situation did get a little out of control, to put it nicely. And the PGA of America has apologized and said they knew they were wrong and they want to right something like that and not let it happen again. What was your take on that? Because I loved the scene of the fans walking up behind him, but you know, the guy that put his arm around him and pulled on Phil, and Brooks said that some shots were taken at his knee as he was trying to get through the crowd. That kind of stuff can't happen.
No, 100%. I mean, watching it with my wife, we both were shocked. I mean, it got out of control. I mean, fans were jumping over the ropes and through bunkers, and nobody can, not like Phil or Brooks or anyone is like above anyone, but nobody can touch you as you're competing like that. That wasn't right. And just the amount of time it took for Brooks to get through the crowd was shocking. And I thought it was cool how they let the crowd come down the fairway towards the green. I mean, that was great, but they did it in obviously a horrible way. They needed to be much more prepared for a moment that size. And that part of it was terrible and should have never happened.
Rapsodo Mobile Launch Monitor. Improve your golf swing today. Pro-level launch data in the palm of your hand. It is very accurate. Within 2% of a $20,000 unit. The Rapsodo MLM app automatically tracks stats and stores video with Shot Tracer, helpful for club gapping and understanding true distances for each club. Rapsodo MLM provides immediate feedback data and creates a better practice environment, not mindlessly hitting balls. Extremely portable, cases about the size of a rangefinder. And you know what? You can use it both indoors and outdoors. I love this launch monitor. It's the Rapsodo Mobile Launch Monitor. Check it out at rapsodo.com, R-A-P-S-O-D-O.com, rapsodo.com.
Now, I know you were obviously playing in PGA Tour events long before the pandemic, and then you played some when the pandemic after it happened last year at the Players. And then when we came back last year, I believe the first event then out was the Charles Schwab Challenge.
Yep.
And there were no fans, and now we're starting to get fans back. Talk about the differences in having a full fan atmosphere versus none versus the kind of limited aspect.
Well, no fans, I was terrible. I really struggled with my play for many reasons, not just being fans. I mean, obviously, we're used to playing in front of no people our whole life and when we're at home and whatever. But the atmosphere that fans create at a golf tournament, especially on the weekend when you're playing well, you're in contention, big venues like Quail Hollow or Jacksonville for the Players. I mean, when there's a lot of people, like your heart beats more, like you're more alive, like it's not like you're more nervous, but you're just like, you have more adrenaline going through your body. And for me, that helps me significantly. It helps my focus, helps me. Let's be honest, it's nice when you hit a good shot and people are clapping. Like,
right.
Yeah, that was a good shot. I did hit a good one. So that part of it sometimes can just a little bit of momentum to get you kind of feeling good and playing well. So obviously recently we've been playing with kind of limited fans, which has felt like full fans because having nobody there was just terrible.
Right.
So, soon enough here, we're going to be full capacity and rocking and rolling, and we're going to hear all the drunk fans yelling, and it's going to be great again. So I'm a huge fan of as many people there as possible. One of my favorite events is the Waste Management Phoenix Open for obvious reasons. And
right.
I mean, it's fun just to have people there watching you and yelling and having a good time. And I think it's important for our sport to have fans.
Did it take the fans did it take losing fans for that period of time to realize how much you really enjoyed them? Because you probably never thought you'd ever play an event where you didn't have fans.
Yeah, I mean, very true. I mean, it's obviously sometimes when people are yelling or too loud or moving, you're like, oh, they're annoying me. But it's much better to be annoyed than no one be there. That's for sure. So I'll never complain about that again.
So where were you Monday night when you finally saw the video of that's now been taken down, by the way? My Twitter account was locked as we started to do this podcast because I posted the Bryson Brooks video from Monday night. I had to go on and recover my Twitter account. So I will not be reposting that. But what was your take on that? It really kind of took the world by storm on Monday evening.
Well, at first when I was like kind of scrolling through the social media and I kept seeing it and I didn't watch it all, to be honest. And then after I saw it for 10, 20 times, I was like, oh, I better watch this. And it was funny to watch. I mean, obviously with Brooks and Bryson, I mean, you have two like alpha dogs. I mean, Brooks obviously is a fairly unique interview. He always is very blunt to the point and obviously there's got to be some kind of beef between them for Bryson to even have a little jab and Brooks to react that way. And I mean, it was surprising that it was kind of leaked out, but it's not a bad thing, though. You can't, even though Brooks and Bryson are both superstars, both on the U.S. teams, Ryder Cup, President Cup for years to come, not everybody's going to like each other. I mean, they're allowed to not like each other. Nobody's going to be, I mean, Tiger and Phil were not best friends for years. So, it's fine. I mean, hey, they're both very much their own person. They don't socialize too much on tour from what I can kind of see. They're both their own kind of strange human like we all are. And I don't see anything wrong with it. It was funny, I thought.
And while we're here talking about it, I do want to admit, since we're here, maybe a little confession style, I did watch it probably 20 times and turned it up to try to hear what Bryson said that upset Brooks, but I never could make out what he said. So yeah. I guess we'll never know.
I have to admit, I watched it 20 times too. I mean, Brooks's facial expressions were just legendary. He was so angry. I mean,
it really was good stuff. And then today they just announced just a few hours ago that we are getting another edition of the match. You know, the match started with just Phil and Tiger. And then we had Phil and Brady versus Tiger and Manning. We've had another offshoot with, I believe, Steph Curry and Charles Barkley were a part of it. And now today they announced we're getting Phil and Tom Brady again will pair up and they will play Bryson and Aaron Rodgers from the Green Bay Packers. And Tom Brady is already throwing shade on Aaron Rodgers on Instagram. So this is another – I think these matches are good for golf. What do you think?
I do too. I mean, obviously, there's been a few of them now, so – they're obviously generating some interest and money for whoever charity involved. And so, yeah, I mean, obviously people are watching or else they would have stopped it. So, and I mean, obviously in the US, I mean, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers are enormous names. People love them on the football field, but obviously people love them off the field and in the golf setting too. And I mean, watching Phil in his last match there, I mean, he's phenomenal in that setting when he's mic'd up and I mean, he's describing what he's thinking over shots and that part of golf is not really seen as much as it could be when people are mic'd up. And I mean, Phil is the best at that. I mean, he's phenomenal at describing how to hit shots and whatnot. So I think viewers really like that. And plus he can kind of coach his partner, Tom Brady, around. And I mean, who won't want to watch DeChambeau just smashing it? And it's fun for golf. And obviously, Aaron Rodgers has been in the press here a lot with his Green Bay Packers. So yeah, I mean, four monster names in the worlds of sport, and it'll be a lot of people will watch it.
Yeah, and it's, for me, it's fun to see. And I am a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan, so I like Tom Brady. I appreciate all he's done for my team in just a short amount of time. But it makes me feel better to finally see Tom Brady's not great at everything, because so far we have always been accustomed to he just wins all the time. So to see him on the golf course not play so great does make me feel a little bit better about myself and my game.
Well, absolutely. It's good for – I mean, obviously, if you're watching professional golf every week, you can see how bad we are sometimes too. So, but yeah, having whatever handicap Tom is or Aaron is, watching them hit terrible shots is I mean, that's why people watch. I mean, they like to see the good shots, but let's be honest, people like to watch the train wrecks too. So,
right.
So they'll see a bit of everything in that match.
It's like the bad singers on American Idol. Everybody says, okay, that guy can sing. But when you get a really bad one, you're like, everybody's got to see that one.
Exactly.
So I've got to tell the story of how Russell and I met. So you want to tell it or do you want me to tell it?
Fire on.
So my son plays he plays for high school. He plays for his niece high school team. And we're playing at a match here in Ponte Vedra. I believe it was at the Yen and Club on the Lagoon course. And Russell was walking, watching his nephew play. And I just saw you walking by yourself. I was riding with my wife in a cart. And we just, you know, as when you're on the golf course and you see somebody, you just strike up a conversation while you're watching other people play golf. And so we must have talked for a good 3 or 4 holes. You're talking 20 or 30 minutes. Russell's walking. I'm driving the cart for a little while. And then I get out of the cart and just start walking and we're talking. And I make the stupid mistake of saying, so do you play golf? And Russell goes, yeah, I play. He still doesn't tell me who he is, by the way. So we get to another hole and we're walking and this other lady comes up to me and she says, do you know who that guy is that you're talking to? I'm like, no, he's a really nice dude. She goes, that's Russell Knox. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, that's the Russell Knox. She's like, yes. I'm like, I feel like such an idiot. Now I went over, I apologized. And then we enjoyed the rest of the match, but it was super cool to see you out there in a completely normal event, watching your nephew play golf.
My 5'10" skinny fat guy frame just blends in beautifully with everyone. So no, I mean, hey, we're obviously all just dudes, and I was out there enjoying watching my nephew Anthony play, and you had a logo of the legendary Matt Every on, so I think I asked you about that. And
I did.
And yeah, that was it. But no, I was enjoyed that day of watching some carnage of junior golf, and it was nice to get to know you.
It is, you know, junior golf is fun to watch. Do you find it difficult when you watch your nephew play? You see him make some mistakes that you know what he's doing. Do you find it hard to not say anything while he's in the middle of a round?
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm sure he's watched me many times and he's like, why did you hit it in the water or whatever? So, I mean, golf is extremely difficult, obviously, when you're spectating, caddying. I mean, it's hard to play, obviously, but it's much more nerve-wracking when you're watching, especially a family member, or because you're wanting them to do really well. But at least when you're playing, I mean, it's all on you. So if you do terrible, you can kind of accept it. But I mean, you just want the kids to do their best and enjoy it more than anything. I mean, obviously, you have to learn from your mistakes in golf, and it takes years and years and years to do it. So unfortunately, there's a lot of tough days in your kind of growth as a golfer.
There is. It takes a lot of patience. And a lot of times you think to yourself, I know I'm guilty of this. I went out a couple times ago. I played well, shot in the 70s, then went out again, like I said, just last week, shot 75 with a triple, and went out yesterday. And I thought, you know what? I figured it out. I got it. Yesterday was not so well. We won't even go over what I shot yesterday, but it was not good. And so it is such a frustrating game and a hard game. Do you, as a professional, do you sometimes feel like I've got it figured out and then something else goes awry, or are there days where you do head to the course and you expect to play well and things don't go as well as you thought they were?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's a crazy game. And I mean, sometimes when you have no expectations, I mean, you might have a terrible warm-up on the range and kind of be a little freaked out, and then go out on the course and you chip in on the first hole or make a 30-footer, and away you go and you shoot the easiest 5 or 6, 7 under you've ever shot in your life. So it's such a strange game. And sometimes when you know you're playing well and you're hitting the ball great in practice and on the range, sometimes then you almost put too much pressure on yourself to perform well, because, I mean, you know your game is where you want it. So I think it's always best to kind of, like, for me, I've always liked to see some results previous before I have like a big finish or a victory. But it's also important to realize that, I mean, you're just trying your best and it can happen really at any moment. I mean, Phil being a perfect example. I mean, obviously didn't have huge success this season on the tour and then all of a sudden wins a major. So you just, if you have the ability, which everyone does on tour, you just have to be positive, because you just never know when, like I said, the stars are going to align. And I mean, it takes luck to win a tournament, a lot of luck. And when it's your week, it's your week. So, I mean, you just got to kind of one foot in front of the other, try and enjoy the roller coaster ride and try your best.
Yeah, it's playoff time. Big stakes, bigger promotions. DraftKings Sportsbook is putting you courtside with the chance to turn $5 into $200. That's 40-1 odds on any basketball game. All you have to do is pick any team that is still on the hunt for the trophy. And if that team wins, you will receive $200 in free credit. That's right. Pick any team that is still in contention, bet $5. And if that team wins, you cash $200 in free credits. All it takes to claim these 40-1 odds on the basketball team of your choosing is place a $5 bet on that team and that team to win. Don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook also offers great odds and promotions on baseball, hockey, and golf. So much more all week long. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code Travis when you sign up to turn $5 into $200 in free credits. Bet on the basketball team of your choice to win their next game. And if they do, you claim the $200 in free credit. That's promo code Travis for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Now, Russell, do you put more pressure on yourself when it's a major event, or maybe when you play here at TPC Sawgrass because it's a home game, so to speak? Are there certain tournaments where you do put a little more pressure maybe than you should on yourself because you want to win?
Yeah, I would probably say yes. I mean, in the past, I've used kind of past year's success as a as an indicator of how maybe I should do. So, I mean, for example, I mean, Hilton Head, I've had a lot of really high finishes there. So every time I go there, I'm like, I feel like a little more pressure because I know I can perform well there. And same with the players in Jacksonville. I mean, of course, I went to college there at JU and I've lived there half my life now. So yeah, I mean, that's a tournament where I want to do well, but it doesn't work like that, unfortunately. You just have to, you're almost trying to make every tournament the same, and you just never quite know when it's all going to come together and play well. But for that reason, it's kind of the most important just to kind of enjoy the ride and enjoy the challenge. I mean, I know that this is not going to last forever, so I need to kind of cherish every moment, every opportunity I get to play on the tour, and I hope I can kind of have a great kind of next half of my career, if you want to put it that way.
Right. You know, your game has been trending upwards lately. You've had some good finishes. I know you had some good finishes here at the Charles Schwab in the last couple of years. Last year was coming off of COVID, so it was a very different tournament. But the previous 2 years, I believe there was a top 10 and a top 20 in there. So what do you attribute the changes that you've been going through that your game is so much better now?
Yeah, I've worked with a new coach now for probably 8 months or so, a South African guy called Mark McCann. Also works with Nick Taylor and Martin Laird, fellow Scott on tour. So he's been a huge part of my success. I had my old college golf coach, Mike Fleming. He was my coach for like 8 years, and he passed away in 2014 or 15. And to be honest, since then, I've really struggled to find a coach that I've like gelled with. Like Mike and I were so close and we talked about everything. And I felt that was when my game was the best it's ever been, kind of early 2015 into 16. But then sadly, I kind of lost that connection with a coach. And I've bounced around a few different people, but I've never really found someone I felt super comfortable with talking to about golf and my swing and just life and golf in general, really. So Mark has been a guy which is very similar to my old coach. So I think just naturally it's helped my game as I've had someone to bounce ideas off. And he's really kind of got a grasp of how kind of simple I like to make it. And so that has been a huge part of my success in the last year or so. And it's been slow. I haven't had the kind of like rock star finish, if you want to say, but I've been up there quite a few times and just haven't quite put it all together, but I've had a lot more solid tournaments rather than disappointing ones. So it is trending. You're right.
Are there any major changes that you are working on in your swing? Are there any certain swing thoughts you have?
Not really, to be honest. I mean, I was out there this morning. I was working on maybe just a little bit slower backswing, just a little more kind of deliberate. Sometimes I get a little quick. But no, to be honest, it's very simple stuff. I mean, set up and just try and return the club back to square as much as possible. And my brain just doesn't function well with too many different things. So I like to keep it as simple as possible.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because a lot of people stand over the ball and they've got a backswing thought and then something at the top and then something through impact. And all you're doing is thinking instead of playing golf.
True. I mean, we all play our best golf when we just look and react and kind of hit it more a flag. So, I've tried to make it kind of as simple as that and try and not play as tight and nervy. And the problem is as you get older in golf, you have a lot of negative memories as well as good memories. So, I mean, someone like Phil, for example, he's played golf his whole life. I mean, he's obviously had a lot of disappointments, but the trick is to try and be as positive as possible. Remember the good moments. And those are the guys that can have the longest careers.
Right. Have you played? Obviously, you have played with Phil in the past. You have any good experiences that you really remember from playing with Phil?
I've only played with Phil once. It was at Quail Hollow. It was probably 7 or 8 years ago now. And we teed off on Saturday. It was just the two of us. And we were up towards the lead. And we were in like maybe the third last group. And I did a horrible job. Like I was like freaked out about playing with Phil, such a big name. And I mean, I just couldn't settle down. My heart was like just pounding the whole front nine. I think I shot 5 over and I was just terrible. And Phil played great. He was actually leading. He was like just playing incredibly well, birdies, eagles, holding putts. And I kind of settled down on the back nine a little bit, and I think I shot even on the back. So I shot maybe four or five, six over, I think, for the day. And Phil got to the last hole and made triple. He was leading on the last hole on Saturday, and he made a seven. So it was a sad way for him to end such a great round, because he was like six or seven under for the day. Wow. But yeah, that was my only time playing with him.
Now, let me ask you that. When you play with a partner, if the partner's not playing well, putts aren't going in the hole, drives aren't straight, does that affect your play at all with seeing those things happen?
I would say not as much if your playing partner's playing poor. But if your playing partner's playing really well, most of the time, not in that case, but if you can both get in some kind of rhythm together, you can kind of pull each other along to both play well. I, unfortunately, at that time in my career, was not prepared for the madness that surrounded the circus of Phil Mickelson. But right. Obviously now that's a different story as my career's went on and I've got more experience playing with a lot of the big guys. So yeah, I mean, it's always more nerve-wracking to play with a superstar, but it's also an honor to kind of see where your game is kind of matching up. So,
right. Have you played with Tiger before, or like Dustin, Rory, those guys? I'm sure you've been on tour long enough to be paired with most of these guys.
Yeah, no, I've played with everyone now. So I got to play with Tiger the first two rounds of the Open Championship at Carnoustie with Hideki Matsuyama. So was a huge highlight in my career. I mean, getting to play with Tiger in a major in my home country of Scotland. And I had just won the Irish Open a couple of weeks before. And I remember to this day, it'll give me goosebumps talking about it. I mean, Tiger got announced and it was one of his kind of comebacks, and he was actually doing great in the tournament. But he got like a huge roar on the first tee, and then I hit after him and my roar was as big, if not bigger, than Tiger's. And I just remember like, please get the ball on the tee. Like, hand was shaking and the ball kind of like oscillated on the tee and then it stopped. I was so happy. And I kind of like thinned it down the fairway and off I went. But that was like I've won three big times throughout the world, but that moment in my life was probably the most memorable, just getting to play with a hero of mine and in his prime, which was pretty cool.
That's a great story. Have you played with Bryson before?
I have. I haven't played with Hulk Bryson, though.
Okay.
So pre-protein shake Bryson I played with. Yeah.
You know what? That's what I wanted to ask you, if you had done that, because, you know, Rory was not ashamed to say that he got caught up chasing speed and it had hurt him a little bit. Have you ever found yourself wanting to chase speed? And if so, do you feel like it hurt your swing at all?
Well, I did. I kind of chased a little bit before Bryson did. I worked with local legend Justin James, long drive guy in Jacksonville, and we worked we're working together in the gym and then also on the range doing speed stuff for I don't know, probably 4 to 6 months. And ultimately I didn't perform well when I was working with Justin, but that had nothing to do with him giving bad advice or anything. My swing was probably not in as good a position as it is now. But it was a journey I wanted to go down. I've never really been into fitness as much. And I've known Justin's dad, Jerry James, for many years. And so he's always kind of pushed me to get into that side of it, being such an animal that he is.
Yeah, and he used to be a professional wrestler, actually.
Yes, Agent Orange.
Legend. Yes.
So I thoroughly enjoyed my time with Justin. And it was amazing what he was able to help me achieve. I mean, I really did pick up a lot of distance in a short period of time, and it was definitely a fun journey to go down. And unfortunately, I didn't stick it out maybe as much as I could have, and that had nothing to do with Justin whatsoever. I thoroughly enjoyed every minute of it, but it was just at a moment in my career where I was not spiraling down, but I was really needing to get back to how I played golf, I basically chose that I working out as much as he wanted me to wasn't in my best interest at the time, and I needed to just get back to kind of hitting fairways, hitting greens, and how I've played my whole life. But it was staggering how much distance I picked up, and I think ultimately now I might be reaping a little bit of the benefits of that 6 months of training, because I'm not swinging it nearly as fast as I did with Justin, but it's still faster than it was when we started the journey. So it was a fascinating journey, and I loved every minute of it, to be honest.
So you found like a happy medium. Instead of being at 100%, you've backed it off a little bit, but you've still picked up. There are still distance gains from where you were when you started.
Yes. And I know in my brain now that I have more speed. So like, if I did want to like really step on one in a round, I know it might be there. So that's kind of nice to know. But and Bryson's kind of done that too. Like you can't play on the PGA Tour golf swinging long drive swings on the course. That's just unfortunately not the way that you're going to perform your best. But it's nice to have that and then being able to back off. If you don't have it, then you can't back off. So I think you'll see Bryson tone it down potentially over this next kind of 6 months, but he's still going to be hitting it miles further than everyone else.
Right. You know, you bring up a good point. I don't think a lot of people realize that when you're standing on a tee, Russell, and you're going to hit the ball, what would you say percentage-wise you are swinging? You're not swinging 100%.
I mean, to be honest, though, close to it, but obviously every hole is a little different. I mean, if you get on a hole that is wide open, but I mean, 100% in a tournament is different than 100% on the range after you've hit 20 balls in a row as hard as you can. So it's impossible in a tournament to go from just hitting a couple putts with your heart rate low to gaining maximum speed in like 1 minute when you go to tee up the ball. So all of us can gain speed if you just hit ball after ball, one after another, tee it up, smash it, because your heart rate gets up. So like when you see Bryson on the tee, he'll like breathe hard and like move fast to like try and increase his heart rate, his adrenaline. And that's the only way you can gain maximum distance. So like if you're standing on the tee with your heart rate as low as possible, you're not going to be able to create the speed that you can create if your heart is pounding. So that's the only way you're going to be able to get maximum distance.
Right. So if we see you breathing really heavy on the tee this week at the Charles Schwab, we know what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
We know exactly. So we've got some busy weeks coming up, the Charles Schwab Challenge. I know you've got your pro-am later this afternoon, right?
Yeah. What time is it now? I got a couple hours until I'm on the tee, so.
So you've got your pro-am, you practice this morning, and then your first tee is tomorrow. Who are you playing with this week?
I have a good group this week. I'm playing with Graham McDowell from Northern Ireland and Carlos Ortiz from Mexico. So I'm looking forward to playing with those guys, and I think we'll have a good time.
Tell Graham McDowell that his restaurant here at Nona Blue here in Ponte Vedra has the best buffalo sauce on the planet.
Okay, I'll do
it
that.
It is literally the best there is. Now, do you, when you get your pairing sheet every week, are there certain guys you look forward to playing with because you know you're more comfortable, you play better with?
I mean, as much as I should answer no to that, yeah, the answer is yes. I mean, if you're playing with guys that you enjoy playing with, you like, I mean, Graham McDowell's a very nice guy to play with. I mean, he talks a lot. So does Carlos Ortiz. We have the same physio we use, Carlos and I. So we have that in common. So, yeah, I mean, that's going to be a very comfortable pairing for all of us. So even if I don't play well this week, I'm going to enjoy my 2 days with them. But more than likely, hopefully we'll all play well. And like I said, when you're seeing good shots and it's easy to chat with the people you're playing with, just to relax a little bit, it can make it easier. Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, we're all out there selfishly for ourselves, and we're not out there to have a good time and chit chat and make friends. So right. If it comes to the end and you got to step on their throat to win the tournament, then you're going to try and do that. So.
Absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with that. What does your schedule look like moving forward?
Well, next week, the Memorial, I'm kind of right on the line if I'm going to get in, qualify or not. Right now I'm an alternate. So depending on if guys withdraw or not, I potentially will play there. If not, I'll come home to Ponte Vedra for the week and just relax. I think my grandmother from San Diego is coming over with my aunt, so it'll be nice to see them. So it'll be a win-win. If I get into Memorial, great. If I don't, I get to spend time with my family. So that'll be fun. And and then after that, I mean, obviously you have US Open. I'm not 100% sure if I'm going to try and qualify or not yet. And then there's the event in South Carolina And then US Open, Travelers. Yeah, so then, there's a lot to play. So there's a lot to play for in this last little bit. And to be honest, I'm at a nice place in the FedEx Cup right now. Nothing flashy. I would love to have a great finish to the year to kind of move up there. And that's the goal. So really see if I can push forward here and put together multiple good weeks.
Good deal. Well, Russell, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your time. And good luck this week at the Charles Schwab Challenge and moving forward. Hope you have a great week. Enjoy yourself and play well.
Perfect. Thanks very much for having me in. Anytime.
You got it, man. Thank you very much.
Okay, cool.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, that was good.
Appreciate it. Real quick, also,
let's take a second to talk about the guys and girls over at Encore Golf. Encore has earned a reputation of having the most cutting-edge technology in their golf balls that the industry has seen in quite some time. Their team in Buffalo, New York, is changing the script of golf technology through the perimeter-weighted designs, use of high-density particles, and even a nano-transitional layer in their latest creation, which offers players enhanced accuracy and control for every shot on the course and extreme velocity off the tee. They already have their award-winning Elixir and Avant 55 golf balls, but the new Vero X1 is the highest performance ball to date. With their full suit of golf balls, they are transforming the game for players of all skill levels. Visit EncoreGolf.com/Travis Fulton for more details about their products that are revolutionizing the game. Now back to the Stripe Show podcast.